everybody, and welcome to another episode of BitNote. This is David Collins here, and we've got some great selection of video game music tunes warmed up here, so hope you enjoy yourself for the next half hour, and hope you enjoy. Okay, to start the show off with, I'll be playing a track from a game that I haven't actually played, but I have watched. This is actually a phenomenon that's actually getting very popular in gaming, that people are watching people play video games rather than play them themselves. And if you're like me, at the first thought it was, oh, this is so ridiculous, you know, you've got to actually play the game, there's no experience quite like playing it. But as time went on and I thought back and I realised, you know, there are always times you enjoy someone playing, watch a game. I remember in the classic arcades, I'd like sit by and watch someone play a cool game, partially because I couldn't play it myself, and partially just to see, you know, because it cost money each time, maybe I didn't have the money, and partially to just see how other people approach the game. And sometimes I wasn't that interested to get that far into the game, but I saw someone who's like really skilled and did. For instance, in Time Crisis 2, I never got that far in it on my own. But by watching someone else play it, I learned that there's a level in it where a guy on top of a train picks up a gigantic missile and tries to bludgeon the protagonist to death with it. So, cool stuff. I mean, it would cost a lot of credits for me to find it out, but it's just, you know, thanks to watching someone else playing a game, I was able to share into that experience. And now it appears that people are doing that more en masse using the power of the great and almighty internet. And that's basically a pretty good thing, because in some ways people get exposed to games that they wouldn't otherwise do, or see how games that they didn't understand before are played. And it can be a great introduction or a great way to be exposed to games. Now, there's basically two, I'm hugely simplifying it, but there's two ways they do it. Either someone, you know, records themselves playing the game, kind of a let's play, and puts it up on YouTube and people can watch it, and that's really cool, and a lot of people do that. And sometimes people stream it, which is basically live, as they're actually playing the game. Somehow, you know, their picture of their screen and their voice gets transferred over the internet and basically broadcast to everyone. So it's like a TV station or channel that broadcasts at certain times, and when it's broadcasting you get to see a person playing the game. And often they don't actually end up saving much bits of the game except for certain parts and everything. Streaming or broadcasting is actually pretty popular, and surprisingly enough there are quite a few people who actually make money doing it, which I think is pretty damn cool. And the whole thing is, apparently even if you're just decent, if you put in the effort, have a regular schedule, play a couple of basic games, you can get a small following with a couple of regulars with pretty decently, and I mean that's pretty awesome. And obviously what sort of game you stream and everything else is completely up to debate. I mean, there you go. The stream that I followed to watch this game was actually kind of a dual stream, interestingly enough. There were basically two artists who were basically doing a different kind of stream where they basically streamed their art and streamed their comics as they write them and everything. And that's pretty cool in and of itself. I mean, that's actually a whole different issue. Artists are basically streaming their art as they draw it and then taking commissions from people who are in the stream, you know, who are watching the stream and chatting amongst themselves. And they're responding and saying, okay, does anyone want to take commissions? Someone will say it. And there's all this sort of fun stuff that can happen. So with streaming, there's something you don't get with video, and that's actual interaction live with the people who are chatting with it. Although with some game streams there's a bit of a delay, but people manage. And so it was a stream between two artists, but one of the artists was also a big gamer, and she had played so many games. In fact, she tended to accept games as commissions as well, which means her Steam library is utterly gigantic. And one game she played recently was Tormentium, Dark Sorrow by Ono, which I believe is a Polish game development company. And boy, I mean, for a start, it was kind of an interesting game. It was kind of an indie point-and-click adventure game, and it was relatively short, so we could play through the whole thing. But boy, this was an interesting thing. She clearly liked a lot of point-and-click adventure games. She was playing stuff like Toonstruck and Grim Fandango and everything. But this game, boy, it's kind of recent. It was actually crowdfunded on Indiegogo, so, you know, it's kind of like recent part of that whole thing. And here's the thing. It's kind of nightmarish. Now, the art is absurdly beautiful. We're talking about, like, utterly detailed, beautifully rendered, highly skilled, great vistas and things and expressions. But the art direction is kind of like demonic. The streamer kept referring to it as like an Iron Maiden album cover. Now, we're not talking about like the Brutal Legend sort of like hard rock album covers where they took, you know, all inspiration from a lot of album covers, but kind of gave it like soft and cartoony edges and kind of made it feel welcoming and just, you know, played up the rocking thing. This game actually takes the album covers and plays up the actual horror thing, taking place in a desolate thing. You basically start the game hanging from a ship imprisoned in a metal cage, and meanwhile, all around you, there's a meteor storm going around, completely screwing everything around you up. You're then thrown into a castle, and you bet you're, you know, imprisoned there, and you bet your ass that there's torture involved. A lot of torture, and like a whole load of skeletons and demonic creatures and twisted jesters and all this sort of stuff. They are actually, it's not completely unrelenting, they are actually a couple of things, but yes, this is the sort of game where people can meet and kind of a grim end, and indeed you actually have a part of role to play in that. The game does have something of a morality system. For instance, in one stage, there is a torturer who is constantly torturing someone with spikes through them, trying to tell them, you know, like, this is, you must redeem yourself. This, through pain comes redemption. Speaking of which, redemption is the theme of the game, but I'll get to that in a second. And basically, you can, through a puzzle, and there are plenty of puzzles in the games, you can rig into the thing, and you have the option to either stop the torture device from operating or have it overact, so that instead of spiking just the person, it also ends up impaling the actual torturer. So, yeah, do you want to release the guy or just, you know, cause the whole thing? And, you know, some of the other things are a little more straightforward, such as that they'll, you know, do you want to do something that'll end up getting someone killed or not? And that's a bit more straightforward. But as the game progresses, it's clear that some of your choices may actually have an impact. And indeed, it does have an impact in the end of the game. I can't and won't spoil it for obvious reasons. I will say that the main protagonist, it questions the protagonist's fate a lot. There's themes of redemption, because the protagonist is searching for the memory at the end. He's searching for his memory. He's trying to figure it out. But there's a hint that maybe there's another theme about what he's actually searching for that even he doesn't realize it yet. And at the end of the game, you know, I'm not spoiling it, but I will say he actually does figure out what his missing memory actually is. Do you see Gravity Rush? It is not that hard to resolve these things. It is actually possible to end the story by actually resolving it. And I've talked on the show about how certain games completely seem to have actually proper endings, but this one does it. The game raises a lot of questions. It seems kind of like a hellish, torment, fantastic, nightmarish scenario. And at the end of the game, you actually get some understanding of what the heck is going on and some sense of the world. It actually resolves itself. And for a video game, it's finally great to actually see something like that happen. So I'm going to play music from one of the endings. It's a kind of a beautiful bit of music. From what I can tell, it's actually licensed. The actual developers themselves didn't actually create the music, but considering apparently there were only 3 developers, and that's pretty damn amazing, especially since one of them was clearly an insanely talented artist, or skilled artist, because apparently, you know, artists don't like being told they're talented, usually because they end up putting thousands of hours of work into actually getting their art to that level. But I mean, obviously, with the 3, they didn't quite have a musician on their team, so they managed to get their music from people, and apparently that's making it a little hard to credit, but I'll talk a bit more about afterwards. So I'll give you the music track for one of the endings. If you play through the game and don't get this ending, that means you probably did something different from what the streamer I watched did. And so I'll play the track, leave it with you, and chat to you later. Have a listen, and hope you enjoy.
Love's a curse, I can't be helped. Go on, do your worst, I'm under your spell. Hold me till it hurts, I close my eyes. Wrap me in your words and say you're mine. I won't ever let you slip away. From my head, it's like I'm in a dream when I'm awake. Calling your name, and I'll keep reaching, holding on, 'cause I won't ever let you slip away. Smoking gun, I burn.
And what you just heard there was Slipping Away. It is from Tormentum, Dark Sorrow. And as you can tell, it's a pretty good thing. Near as I can tell, it's actually a cover. It's of a song that was originally done by Jacob Miller, Matt Naylor and Stephen Stern. Although it's a little hard to tell the music for this game because for music in the credits, they just put down Video Blocks and Paris Music. Kind of annoying when that happens. It's like clearly they're the companies that supplied a lot of the music, but and for sound design they put Sony Sound Effects. Clearly they're the companies that supplied things, but you know those things in movies where they've got these little things that show each individual song and where it comes from? You know, maybe I don't want to go that far, but just a little more detail about who composed which song. Very nice idea, games. Thank you very much. But yes, as you can tell, that's still a pretty good song. Like I said, Slipping Away, originally by Jacob Miller, Matt Naylor and Stephen Stern, and from the game Tormentum by Ono Studios. So I know it's a bit cheeky of me to actually play a video game without actually... to play music from a video game without actually playing the game itself. But like I said, for a start, it's kind of a new phenomenon. Second of all, there's streaming excitement. And third, just some games kind of work better than others. Now, I just want to be very, very clear here. There's still nothing like playing the game itself. No matter how many times you actually, you know, watch a game being played, that's still not the same as actually playing the game itself. It just isn't. It can't never be. I can explain the difference, but really the only way to properly explain it is to first have someone watch a game and then play the game. And even that experience might differ depending on which specific game it actually is. However, some games work towards streaming better than others, and I think Tormentum kind of worked because a lot of it is in the art style and stuff. I've got a bit of a story focus. While I kind of like puzzles, I wasn't overly enraptured by the puzzle sort of thing, The thing is, I wouldn't have really played the game myself, and that's really the key thing. It's great to watch someone else play it. It's great to see what this game is about, but I don't know, it's just a little too, you know, dark and scary for me. Yes, I know, I'm scary. I'm a grown man, and I'm getting a little scared by the horrifying art style of a video game, but it's just not the quite sort of thing I'd, you know, pay money to play through, and that's just a personal preference. It's obviously not a slight on the developers because they did really well for what they were aiming for. And I still really enjoyed like watching the game. And I hope that at least one person, you know, listens to this and buys it so I don't feel as guilty about, you know, not buying this game and still kind of benefiting from it. But the point is, like I said, it was still a great experience to be streamed. And some games are like that. Actually, I remember a recent person saying on an article saying about something like The Order 1886 and saying that, you know, it actually seemed like a game that was great to watch but not actually to play. Now, to be honest, the guy goes on and then says other games, for instance, are like that fall into this category are Spec Ops The Line. And for me, that really impinges on his credibility because while Spec Ops The Line does have a strong story element, there are a couple of moments in that game where you really, really get something incredible experience, but only if you're actually playing it, only if you're the one making the decisions. And I mean, that doesn't apply to one part, but for another part, it definitely does. And really, that kind of damaged his credibility. He almost proved, demonstrated why it's not always a good idea to actually why it can be a bad idea to stream the game. But still, speaking of Order 1886, I don't actually know whether it's like you said, it's had some negative stuff. I haven't played Order 1886 because, quite simply, I don't have a PlayStation 4. I may get one at some stage. I nearly always eventually catch up to the console releases, and of course, The Order is only available on PS4, so no real talking about it right now. But there is kind of a reason I don't tend to buy game consoles at launch, and some of them are actually summarized in this very nice music track. Have a listen to Game Launch Rock.
Wow, there's so many new video game consoles coming out. I'm going to save up my allowance and buy them all.
You might want to think twice about that, kiddo. Back in the 90s, when you bought a new system, it was basically ready to go. But those days are gone by, so buddy, don't be that guy. You wanna be the first in line, but I say no, 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 no. They won't have near enough games, no matter how great they seem. It takes at least a year or two before they're running full steam. Yes, it's a dirty little trick, so you gotta be staunch, kid. Don't ever buy a console at launch. I'm being serious, do not ever buy a console at launch.
But the video game companies promise all these great games and features within the first year.
Sure, just like presidential candidates. They'll say anything to get your vote, the way game companies just want you to buy their console.
Didn't you want a new Wii U?
More like PU.
PS4.
Oh, give me more.
Xbox. Xbox One.
Xbox done.
Ooya?
What? The OS will be a mess, so you gotta be staunch, kid. Don't ever buy a console at launch. Now sing it with me. Do not ever buy a console at launch. That's right. And even if they release a picture-perfect device, you know that 6 to 12 months later, they'll be dropping the price. Ain't that some crap? It's a trap, so you got to be staunch, child. Don't ever buy a console at launch or Apple product. But don't ever, never, never buy a modern gaming console at launch. Don't try it, don't you buy that console at launch. Yeah!
Well, that was a fun little track. It was, of course, by Brentalfloss, a.k.a. Brent Black. And as you can see, it's kind of a fun thing, but has a lot of truisms as well. I kind of completely agree. Like I said, the price is going to drop. You're still not always sure which one's going to have the best selection of games. And, you know, other reasons started in that song. Speaking of launch games, which can be a thing, the next track I've got is actually from a launch game, but I bought it after launch, so it costed me less. For instance, this was originally launched as a launch title for the Nintendo DS, and I believe those tracks were about €35. So instead, I waited until just a few months ago to buy it, and now it was 79p. Yes, 79p, second hand, in GameStop, in St. Stephen's Green Shopping Centre. I have to say, I think that's the cheapest I've ever paid for a game that netted me a physical copy. Then again, I may have bought a copy of Swiv 3D for about 50 pence from a school second-hand thing, you know, kind of like garage boot sale. But then again, with Swiv 3D, I got what I was getting. I did not get the great return to nostalgia, but in glorious 3D that I was hoping with that game. But yes, the one I actually was talking about, no, I wasn't talking about Swiv 3D, that was just a complete digression, was talking about the game called Polarium by Mitchell Corporation. It had music by Soshi Kuiki, and I'll just play the music from that right now.
Thank you.
music was from Plarium. As I said, it was by Michel Corporation and was composed by Soshi Koki. So Plarium is, like I said, it's a puzzle game that was launch title for the Nintendo DS, the game console that had the completely new cutting-edge technology of a touchscreen display in order to play video games. And like I said, this was like years before the iPhone, and that became very popular. And at the time, most mobile gaming was just, you know, standard using controls. Even on phones, you'd probably just use a keypad. But with the Nintendo DS, they said, here you use a touchpad and a stylus. And it was completely breathtaking, and people weren't even sure it would success. So obviously, launch title games took advantage of it. The idea is you get a grid, it's got black and white tiles, and you need to turn every single row of tiles into the same color. So they can be all black or all white, that's fine. The trick is, in order to work this out, you have to draw a line from one tile to the other, all connecting. And when you finish drawing the line that goes from between all the tiles, and you can go out of the border of the square slightly, but back in, then what will happen is when you finally tap it, suddenly all the squares will reverse themselves. So you've got to figure out the right path that will make sure that you reverse the right tiles so that all the ones in each row are either all black or all white. And there's a puzzle mode that's pretty tricky, and there's a challenge mode which involves all blocks falling down. You've got kind of like Tetris, where blocks falling down, you quickly got to reverse all the tiles to remove them and keep going. I played the challenge mode, I barely got more than an E. I played the puzzle mode, it was kind of fun. I could not play the multiplayer mode. I apparently did not know anyone who both had a DS and a copy of a 10-year-old launch title in order to play it with. So there you go. But I think I'll leave it with there. I think we've got time for one more song. I'll give you Aquarium Park Act 1 by Tomoyo Ohanti, and it's from Sonic Colors by Sega. Have a listen, and hope you enjoy. And this has been David Collins with BitNote. All the best.